Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to a special jam-packed edition of Advantage Connors post-round one, or round half of the Masters, sitting here on a Thursday evening recording with you, as always, your co-host, Brett Connors. What's up, Pops? What are you doing?
Well, I've had a good day. I mean, I'm watching golf. I got my tennis in. I got to hit a few golf balls. And I'm not feeling too bad. So, also a good thing is, brother, we're both solo.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Melina's been out of town for a while. She's been in Sweden with her family. I think you've got another day or two on your own. And, and your mom's out of town. You know, not so bad hanging with Bogey, our little mini schnauzer, and Stevie, our little stray cat. So just a couple of days on my own is not so bad.
Yeah.
So, but always good to be with you tonight. So what's on your mind? What can we talk about this week?
Oh, just lots going on, right? It's a bit busy Thursday. We're recording this Thursday. This will come out Friday. Masters is on my mind, just because it's hard not to start with that. You know, they didn't finish the first round. They got started late because of the weather. And once they did get going, some guys didn't even tee off till like, after 4 o'clock or something like that, I think locally, 4 or 5 o'clock even.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys didn't finish. But a couple guys at the top, DeChambeau, Bryson, who's missed the cut, I think, the last couple of years, looked pretty good. 7 under, Scottie Scheffler kind of just ho-hums his way around to a 6 under, where you're just like, right. Geez, man, this guy can just casually shoot those big numbers. He's going to be tough to beat. And then you got some guys like, Willett, you got Homa's up there at 4 under. Fox, you got Hatton, you got Corey Connors, 2 under. You got a lot of guys at 2 unders. Zalatoris got to 4, fell back to 2. Ludvig's up there at 2. Tiger -1. What do you think about that? You see him kind of, lumbering around out there with his beat up body. What are your thoughts on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'm sure over the last number of years since, all that went down, where he's had those surgeries and, has tried to come back and rehab and all that he's tried to figure out a swing, I guess. It's hard for me to think, but I can compare it to tennis, that if you're, if things aren't working right, moving the way that they worked and moved for so many years when you were young, all of a sudden you got to change all that sometimes that's not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if it rains? I've been to Augusta, Brett, and I've played Augusta and I've walked Augusta. It's a tough walk. You don't realize the elevation change that's there. And what happens if it gets wet and it's soggy and he's got to walk through that. And, mm-hmm. How's that going to affect his body? I mean, there's a lot of things, but if you're not right, don't play,
right.
it's kind of that thing too.
I think as long as he's under par, he's going to keep walking. You know, I think if he's playing good, it's going to make it a lot easier to hang in there with some of the pain that he's going through. But
yeah, good point.
You know, if he starts getting over par, you know, messing with the cut line or whatever, then, you know, then those pains become more. But I mean, he's one under, and you can see, like, there's just certain guys on this course, Freddie, you know, just all past winners, even when they're older, VJ or certain guys will pop up. And when they're, you know, way past their quote unquote prime and like still kind of contend or hang in there on this course, because it's such a, you know, locals course. Like, if you know it and you played it, like Phil and all these guys, that they're going to have a chance just, you know, going through the motions like they've done so many times.
Right. Yeah. It's fun to watch. I mean, I'm watching, you know, guys that, you know, they've been there for, I don't know, what, 20, 25, whatever amount of years. And then you're looking at guys like that come out, and it's their first one. Wyndham Clark, you know, for instance, it's his first Masters, and he's, I don't know, in the top four or five, you know, of the world rankings right now, and it's his first Masters. It's kind of interesting, you know, to see how he maneuvers, you know, around the course. You know, sometimes it might be better, you know, that you go in and you just play golf. Mm-hmm. And you don't overthink. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's funny that he's never played it before, and he's like a U.S. Open champion. But yeah, I saw that
just last year.
Yeah, just last year, right?
You know, which was after the Masters. So you
right.
know, it, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, I mean, I think you know, and then I think just certain games match up to it. You know, like guys who can hit it long and have good hands and can putt. You got to be able to putt, man. Man, they're fast. You see, they barely touch it, and they run. DeChambeau's interesting, because remember he took a lot of heat a few years back where he called Augusta like a par 67. He's like, oh, this should play like a par 67, and then went on to like miss the cut, I think, the next 2 years, you know, and then everyone's ripping on him. And so he goes out and shoots 65 today, and he kind of put some space in between him, and then Scheffler caught up later. Guys still have to finish tomorrow. I kind of hate when the rounds get broken up, because then the day is different. The conditions are different. The weather might be a little different, but still fun to be watching tomorrow while I'll be producing a little T2. Tune in out there if you want to watch a little Billie Jean King Cup qualifying action. Ukraine versus Romania, baby. Tune in to T2. But yeah, it's the old.
That being Ukraine and Romania. Well, you know, that brings up something. That brings up that I saw that came across, my Twitter and a few things, that there's a documentary coming out, I think, isn't there?
Ah, yes, you're right. There's a documentary called Nasty coming out.
Ooh.
with somebody I think you know pretty well, Mr. Ilya Nastasi documentary. I didn't know this. You didn't tell me about this. Yeah, I'm like watching the preview, and I'm like, geez, like weird that they didn't call Dad and ask him to be in this. And all of a sudden, boom, like it pops up, and there you are. So
yeah, I think I'm in there for like 2.5 seconds. You know, which is perfect.
Yeah. So, well, that's in the preview. Are you not in the? Where did they interview you for that? Was that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, it's interesting, Brett. You know, I mean, I'm not. That's not my thing to go and do. I mean, if you're a friend, I'll be happy to do it, but. You know, going and having the opportunity, you know, to talk about Nasty, you know, I got into that and I got so animated in talking about him, because he's such a friend, and he took me under his wing when I was, you know, 15, 16 years old, and kind of, you know, guided me around the tour, and you know, not only on the court but off the court too. And you know, I learned a lot from Nasty. You know, some good and some bad, but I learned a lot from him, and you know, his friendship, and you know, playing doubles with him and hanging with him, and you know, and just you know, being able to, you know, sit around with him, you know, when he was at the top of the game was pretty amazing, you know, and you know, he's 6 years older than I am, and he didn't have to do that. And you know, we were both under the guidance of Bill Reardon, you know, back in, you know, the late 60s and 70s. And, you know, I think that had a lot to do with it, but, you know, his friendship, and, you know, he's your godfather, and, you know, his, you know, the way he is, you know, with, you know, with me and my family and all that was, you know, was pretty, you know, amazing to talk about. But even beyond that, you know, what he did for the game, I mean, you know, there's probably, a lot of criticism, on his documentary, some right and some wrong, but the attention and the excitement and what he brought to tennis. I mean, he was the only guy that when he played that the stands were full of players. You know, they wanted to go not only watch his genius, but they wanted to see whatever else they got. You know, that was just a bonus. Mm-hmm. And what he brought to it. And, like I said, we all stepped over the line back then, why? Because we could, so we took advantage of that. But that's what brought in the crowds and like it or not, every time he played, there wasn't one empty seat in the stands. And looking back, I mean, I don't see him much anymore. I talk to him once or twice a year and try to stay in touch, our lives have changed, a lot over the last, 25 or 30 years. And the memories that I have with him and his friendship and a lot of the things that we went through back in the day is still lingers in my mind. I hope it's successful because he deserves a lot of good things that he was a part of back in the day. Everybody tends to remember the shit that happens, but the good things that he brought into it and what he brought to the game and all that should be remembered even more so. So it was fun to be a part of that with him or for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks really cool. The poster is really funny. And it seems like he's one of those kind of polarizing figures who's become more polarizing as like times have changed. Like I'm guessing, back before, Me Too and all these different things, like people looked at the world differently, obviously in the 70s and then obviously times do change and things happen and all that stuff. But, back in the day, he was a ladies man, all the dudes loved him, wanted to watch him play and copy him with the ladies and all that kind of stuff. So, it couldn't have been too bad.
He had a reputation on and off the court. I will say that. And I say that with fondness and hanging with him and back then you have to remember, things were different. We didn't have a roof and if we played, in stadiums that only had one court. So you might be playing a match at, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So what do you do after that? You go try to find a restaurant and get something to eat. Before you know it, it's 4 or 5 in the morning. So, the hang with him was beyond fun.
Yeah.
He wasn't much for sitting around and talking tennis. He didn't want that, practicing, we'd go out and I'd say, okay, I'll meet you at 12 o'clock to practice. And we'd go out for 5 or 10 minutes. And he says, Connor's boy, I've had enough. I practiced enough. I send you somebody else out. He was a beyond talent. I always said that, he was born in a pair of tennis shorts and he played like it and was exciting. So, I know I talk about it, but going back, Bretter, he was beyond a friend and got me through a lot of things back in the day. I miss seeing him a lot. I miss seeing him. He was a good buddy.
Yeah, on the short list of people we made when we started this, he's on it. So we'd still want to get him on the pod, hopefully, before we call it quits someday. And I remember he had that great apartment up the street from where we'd stay on, what was it, Park Avenue?
Yeah, we'd stay at the Regency Hotel.
We'd stay at the Regency, and he was, 4 or 5 blocks up to the left?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we'd go up and do
our laundry and hang with him and go out and have dinners, with his family. And yeah, it was good days. And, I always say that, I miss those days and I do. I don't think I could handle them anymore, as time has gone on, but it sure was a great experience.
Yeah, Uncle Nasty, the laundry connection when you're in town for the U.S. Open. Who knew?
Yeah, who would ever think? Yeah, but he wasn't doing it.
No. We would go over and do it. That was the fun part, because then you got to hang with him and Aunt Alex and you know, and all that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was great.
It's good to see him getting some recognition, just because what a character. Like, it seems like, you know, Vitas could use a documentary too. I know we did the one for Tennis Channel back in 2010, and, you know, that was cool, but I feel like you could do like an even kind of bigger one with a little more, you know, the content that you'd want to do for a more mature audience if you really wanted to.
Right.
But maybe someday. All right, let's move on to where do you want to go next? How about did you see about OJ? OJ.
I did see that. That kind of took me by surprise, Brett, because, you know, during football season, on Twitter, OJ would come up and you know, say things about, you know, some of the games, especially, you know, Buffalo when they were playing, because he was, you know, a Buffalo Bill. And, you know, we're talking about O.J. Simpson, who, you know, has passed away from cancer.
Right.
They kept that awfully quiet.
Yeah, I didn't even know.
I know you do a lot of reading, and I do a lot of reading also in the middle of the night. And I never saw anything about that. And
rushing for 2,000 yards.
I knew him. I did some commercials with him. I did a Hertz commercial with him and so forth. But, comes the trial of the century, that it's been called. And then he got acquitted from that. And then, you know, getting in trouble in Las Vegas with trying to get back some of his memorabilia and spending time in prison. And, you know, I mean, it's been
crazy.
Crazy. Right. I don't know. There's a lot of other words that might define that better. But, crazy is a good start.
Right. Well, I mean, do you remember you knew him? And then do you remember when you turned 40 after your run at the U.S. Open the next year? You turned 40 during the U.S. Open and Nuprin, because you were doing the Nuprin, Nupit with Nuprin commercials.
Right.
And Nuprin threw you your 40th birthday party in New York, in Manhattan somewhere. And OJ was there. I remember seeing him and I want to go get a football signed by him. This is in like 1992. This is like 3 years before all the, you know, the murders and all that stuff. And then weren't you like supposed to play like golf with them in like one of the days surrounding like all that stuff or something like that? And then you canceled or something happened where like you didn't end up golfing with them.
Yeah, we didn't end up. We did a charity event and on the way out, you know, we had a conversation, we talked about golf and, you know, let's get together and try to play sometime. And, you know, that never came about.
Crazy. Right. Just as someone my age, I was like, what was I, 15? When the verdict came down, and just that time in place. If you ever watched the OJ documentary that ESPN did, it's like a 5-part documentary. They go into like huge depth on it, and I think it won an Oscar. It kind of deserved it, because it just, boy, did you learn a lot. Like, you kind of knew the on the surface stuff you knew about what the news taught you, but then this went really deep. And with the Rodney King stuff, and then, you know, all the riots after that, it just has a lot of history balled up in that event. So it's just, when he dies, it was surprising, because you're like, oh shit. Like, you don't really think about him. I don't think about him much. Like, you see him talking fantasy football and shit. Like, you're right, during the football season. But then, just to hear that he died, you're like, oh shit. It's like, you know, one of these people that's kind of big in like pop culture these last 50 years. And it's like, you know, they're gone.
Right. Well, so.
How about we move on to something else? I think, you know how like when somebody gets put in the Hall of Fame, there's normally like a 5-year waiting period, you know, like they retire and then 5 years later, you know, they can be eligible to go in the Hall of Fame. I think we have our first contestant who's eligible to skip the 5-year window and go straight to the Degenerate Gamblers Hall of Fame with my man Ipe Mizuhara. The guy with the Shohei Ohtani, the interpreter. Yep. More news has broken just today or yesterday. And it's crazy. Have you seen this? Supposedly, Ohtani is the complete victim in all of this. Updating last time, we didn't know there was conspiracies and all this stuff. So they're saying he's completely the victim. This guy made 19,000 bets. over a three-year period, three-and-a-half-year period. His average bet was like $13,000. The range of bets was $160,000 as the most and $10 as the least. I got to know what the $10 bet was. Here's where it gets nuts. Total losing bets, $183 million. He won $140 million. His net losses were almost $41 million.
Well, you got to remember that if you lose, you got to pay the vig too, you know.
Right. Is he charging him like interest on that debt too? Like it's.
Yeah. Oh my God! And then, is that on the guy that's making $200,000 or $300,000 a year?
Right, and then well, here's the quote. This was in the text. This is what the interpreter sent the bookie. He said, "I'm terrible at this sports betting thing, huh? LOL." And then this is the quote that's kind of weird to me in the text. And he said, "Can you bump me again?" Meaning like give me a bigger, more credit, you know, because he just was losing. And then he says, "As you know, you don't have to worry about me not paying!" ! And that one's a little weird. Yeah, that's a little weird. Like you're good for it. Like you're just good for millions and hundreds of millions of dollars worth. That's over $300 million in bets.
You got to respect the guy. He wasn't puckering.
it's like 25 bets a day, right?
And that is unbelievable. And so didn't it come out that he had stolen X amount of millions from Ohtani? Isn't that how it came out?
Well, last time we spoke, it was $4.5 million that we thought. Now it comes out it's $16+ million in transfers. And like he was doing things like they have his voice, like he would, you know, like you call and you say, "Hey, transfer $500,000 to this address, right, to this account," and then they're gonna call and try and verify. So they would call, and then he would intercept the call and pretend to be Ohtani, and then like say, "Yeah, it's okay," give personal information, probably a social security or whatever, all that stuff, and then they would okay all these transfers. Crazy to think that you don't notice $16 million going missing, even if it is spread out over time.
In today's times, you know, these guys are talking about so much money I think Ohtani just signed a $700 million contract. Is that?
Yeah.
I think I'm about right there.
Yep.
That's incredible. That's an incredible amount of money to. I look at that in the sports, and you know, for me to see that, you know, I tried to bring, you know, that kind of money into tennis, and hopefully it's come along, nothing like that, but you know, that's amazing, you know. So I wonder, you know, who's keeping track of that for him,
right? Like, you know. I don't know.
Does he have an accountant? Does he have a manager? Does he have, you know, maybe the, you know, who knows? Maybe the manager's scamming too. Who knows?
Right. That's what I'd have to look at everything if I was Ohtani. I'd be like triple checking all my stuff now.
Well, now for sure.
Crazy part is they say he didn't bet on baseball, right? Which is amazing because what you're telling me is he had total discipline to not bet on baseball. He was so disciplined that even though he went down millions of dollars, he never went like, "I'm going to bet on the thing that I actually have inside knowledge of."
Which he was the closest to, right?
But then he didn't have any discipline in the fact that he's a complete gambling degenerate and just got down $40 million. So like on one hand, good discipline. On the other, not so much.
Well, you know, listen, you got to admit the guy's got balls. Yeah, you know, if he's bet, you know, 300 and something million dollars, on sports activity.
Right.
You know, you got to almost say you got to put him in the gambling hall of fame.
For sure. That's what I'm saying.
Don't you?
What a story. I mean, if this is really what it is, I mean, people are still going to have their doubts, and it does seem a little weird. Because every time he would ask for more credit, this dude is just like, he had to know research on him. Like the bookie had to be like, know who this guy is. You're not going to take all these bets and not have some information on the people you're taking the bets from. So he had to know, like, this guy doesn't make millions of dollars a year, but he's quote unquote good for it, like he says in the text. So like, what is it that the bookie must know that makes him quote unquote good for it?
Well, I'm going to be excited to read the outcome of what's going on there and how that's handled, and you know, by who,
mm-hmm.
Or is it by whom?
Right. I mean, the thing I guess we're all rooting for is that Ohtani is just like gullible and is being super taken advantage of by the people around him. You know, you don't right. want to believe that he's any part of it. You want to just, but then that's a bad thing too, to think that his like best friend these last handful of years, you know, has been literally stealing tens of millions of dollars from him to like, crazy. You know, and then like one of the tweets or texts or not tweets, texts that they saw between him was like, oh, I'm trying like soccer. Isn't this fun? Ha ha ha. Like I'm trying soccer. I lost on UCLA. And you're like, whoa, you're betting like college soccer? You know, like, oh, like this guy was just betting on just anything. Like he didn't understand the ramifications. Or I don't know, but it's just, it's a crazy story.
No, nothing like betting on something you don't know anything about.
With other people's money. It's easy to do.
With other people's money. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, boy. That's well, funny. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I don't think that's over. I think there's a lot more to that story, don't you?
Yeah, I do, too. I do too. They don't want there to be, but you know, they're going to try and just make it like, but then this means this guy's going to have to go to prison for like 30 years. Cause it's like huge. That's major, major fraud on like so many levels, like impersonating, identity theft. And like, you know, that's kind of crazy. So,
well, I'm watching.
Yep.
I'll be tuning into that. If you're up reading and you see something, make sure you get it to me.
Okay.
Let me know what's up.
I will.
Keep me posted.
Everybody wants to eat stress-free. And when it comes to Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, that's just what you're going to get. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, that's what I like, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, Vegan, and veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons that they have every week. I like this. I like my snacks. I like all the other kind of goodies you can get along with main meals. Like they got breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages to help you stay fueled up. They got little shots of vitamin juice, anything you need to get you going. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up on your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-go meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. That's what I hate. I hate the cleaning up. I love cooking. I like the making, and I like reveling in the happiness of how good the food is, but cleaning up is not my bag. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility you get, as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. I like that too for people who travel like me a lot. It's good that you can just pause it and then start it back up when you're home. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Here we go, guys. All you got to do as listeners of this podcast is head to factormeals.com/Connors50 and use code Connors50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off the next box. That's code Connors50 at factormeals.com/Connors50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off the next box while your subscription is active.
Did you see about this? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but this was breaking news about a week ago. The WTA finals will take place in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, the next 3 years, 24 through 26. The agreement with the Saudi Tennis Federation will offer record prize money of over 15 million at the 2024 finals, and with further increases the next 2 years. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, they golf from golf to tennis.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You know, in individual sports, right?
Right.
I think is a big part of it. And isn't it funny how, money makes for strange belt bills? I mean, we've said that before. And to come in and be a big part of a reputation change, trying to show the good and throw money into sports and tennis and golf, and what am I supposed to sit here and say, you these kids are out working their ass off trying to make a living and make more money, and if they're willing to put the money in, a lot of things are thrown out the window once the money comes in, right?
Yeah, definitely. It just, I saw Roddick on his podcast was saying something where it's like, I get it. At the end of the day, money, we all know money at the end of the day kind of wins out. But then it's a weird thing because, over how many years is WTA preaching all these kind of like, inclusion and, all these things and, women's rights and all the things they kind of should be preaching, And then for them to sign this deal with a, a place that doesn't maybe have the same belief systems as they are projecting these last few years, I don't know, insert word here that you want to call it, but it just,
Just wanted to bring it up.
It's going to be
interesting to see, if how that is handled and if there's any changes made on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's handled, and if there's any demands, put on one side or the other, and how that's handled, and how it's talked about, and so forth. That's another story. I'd like to follow. If it's in the women's, it's going to get in the men's.
Mm-hmm. Well, they kind of had the one deal already with like the rankings. They're the title sponsor for the rankings. So we talked a little bit about that, but not as much. This is like a big deal with the finals. That's kind of a big deal. So
yeah, it's at the end of the year, and it's that's one that's like a grand slam, isn't it? Considered.
I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, that's a lot of money when you think that the finals only have eight players, $15 million. That's a lot of money to sprinkle over eight people. So
right.
Well, we'll have to see how it goes. Yeah, we'll just see how it goes. Do you think that they? Nah, never mind. It's all good.
So sometimes it's better to move on.
I'm going to move on. Just go over this quick. Just I want to give a little love. Daniel Collins won again last week. And just wanted
to... Like seeing that.
And then Ben Shelton beat Francis Tiafoe in Houston. So that was kind of cool. All-American final. Shelton is now the number one American. He passed up Taylor Fritz, who lost early in Monte Carlo and had a lot of points to defend. And so now Shelton is like the number one American.
Well, that's real youth, right? I mean, how old is he? 20, 21 years old, something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see.
Yeah. So, that's real youth. He's a big
21.
He's got a big game. And
21, yeah. 21, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's big and strong. He's got a big game, and for him to win on clay is for him now he's got some confidence. Is he going to go to Europe? Is he playing Monte Carlo? Is he going to play the clay? Leading up to the French Open, and it's going to be interesting to see the next couple months. Getting into the French and through the French, and then and then through to Wimbledon, which, you know, I would think his game, you know, is more suited for the Wimbledon conditions, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's the part of it I like is seeing him win on the clay, just to see his, like, evolution as a player. Like, you know, how good can he be on this surface? You know, with he's got the big serve, the big ground strokes. He's fast. He's always very aggressive. Like, he's always attacking. And so it's just fun to see, you know, him win Houston. And just, he's not playing Monte Carlo because he had to play Houston final. And, like, because it's a shorter – Monte Carlo's kind of in, like, 9 days. They start on the weekend. But he might be playing Madrid or one of the other tournaments later on. So we'll have to see. And then Collins.
It'll be interesting to see if he plays Madrid because Madrid's in the altitude, little altitude there.
Yeah, you think he'd like that.
You think so. It'd be a little faster. And if he was able to win in Houston, a little faster conditions might even benefit even more. So mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see. And then, you know, once you get to the French, it's a totally different, totally different feel. So, I think the next a couple months on clay, whatever it does for him, it's going to get him in good shape. Mm-hmm. That's one thing for sure. Yeah, if he can get in there and get stuck in and play some matches and have some success, you know, as he has shown that he had in Houston, but then going to the grass, I think. These next couple of months, that's where it's going to, you know, he's going to reach the pinnacle if he looks after himself in his game and so forth, where, the conditions are a little bit different, maybe a little bit quicker and time for him to shine there. So might be a good opportunity for him.
Yeah. Be fun to watch his progression through the summer and just because I think that's like a big question. No one knows, like, it seems like his ceiling could be pretty high. You know, but we don't know. He's still kind of, you know, going through all of this for the first like year and a half of being on tour full time. So, all right, you want to answer a few questions and then get out of here?
Sure. Yeah, I always like to hear what our listeners have to have on their mind. I love doing that.
I like this one just because I had never really thought about it. We always talk about it. But do you remember the last match that you played with the T2000? Like, do you remember? Because I know you would. You stopped Ooh. Playing with it, tried to go to the, you know, bigger racket and then went back to it. But do you remember, hey, there was a match where I was like, I can't do it anymore. You know, blank, I'm going to the Slazenger or whatever it was that you went to and never went back.
Let's see. I'm trying to think because I have when things happened here in Montecito where we had the fires and we had the mudslides and all that happened, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago. The last 10 rackets that I played with, that I actually played with in the tournament, I wrapped up and took those with me. And I'm pretty sure that it was like 1986 or something, maybe Memphis. In 1986, something like that, or mm-hmm. somewhere around there, because the sticker, I could go back and look, but I don't want to unwrap them. They're all nice and cozy right now, but I'm pretty sure it's 1986. And basically, you know, Brett, I was getting older, and I was, you know, everybody started going to the oversized rackets, and I was giving up way too much space. Guys could, you know, run the ball around the rim and still, you know, come out with a good shot with all the topspin and so forth. And, you know, so I had to try to go to something a little bigger and that would help me a little bit too, because, you know, getting older, I was not getting there as quick and having hit the ball, you know, right in the center of the racket and going through all that, you know, was getting a little bit too much. So I'm pretty sure that it was Memphis in 1986. But if you really want to know, I'll go unwrap them and check it out. But they're pretty cozy right now. Leave them alone.
I think
that's the best.
I'll take your word for it. What do you think it compares to? Because it's kind of ridiculous that you the first time you quit it, you had probably played with it too long. And then you went back to it, you know, and played with him for a while. Do you think that was almost like a guy, playing with persimmon, drivers and woods? when like then it went on to like metal, or like when it went on to titanium or oversized or something, and then the guy you're the guy with Persimmon is still somehow making semifinals or like, you know, top fours in Grand Slams with this like old equipment.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, that I was losing it every time I went out there. I mean, I was, you know, it was just too much on me. But, you know, I couldn't find anything that I really liked, you know, because I was used to, you know, such a fast racket. You know, the T2000 was so fast, and, you know, it did so much and fit my game so well that, you know, everything else was, you know, too stiff, and, you know, it took too much work for me to play with it. And, you know, the different materials that it was made of, ceramic or, you know, whatever, from whatever company that was out there, you know, I really couldn't find anything, you know, that that fit me, until towards the end. So I really played for, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, my career with a broomstick, you know, it felt like. Mm-hmm. And because I couldn't get comfortable with a racket, until I got on and started the senior tour, and I went to that racket I played with more or less on that was the Prince Mono, because it was a single throat, our friend Bill Lely, who traveled with me and was a great friend of ours, you know, for years and years since I was a kid, you know, did so many good things to that racket. He added weight to it, he lengthened it, and, you know, really made it fit my game as the T2000 did. So I kind of, you know, wish I'd have had that racket, you know, towards the end of my major tour career. But, you know, it certainly, the Prince Mono certainly did serve me well. On the senior tour, it was, and to be honest with you, Brett, that racket's like 30 something years old, and I still play with it. I have four rackets now, that I play with, and I have four rackets that are brand new. And when I go through those, my tennis days are over.
Then you're done.
Hopefully that's not for a while, because I'm enjoying hitting a few balls as often as I can. But once I go through that racket, those rackets, I think I'll be about done.
Yeah, the badminton racket, as people online like to call it, because of the single throat. That racket did win matches on the ATP Tour. I think most people think you only played with it on the Senior Tour. But if you remember, when you and I flew over to Halle in 1995, and you made the quarterfinals there as an old man, well there into your 40s, around the age I am now, to be honest. You were playing with the Prince Mono on grass there, and won a couple matches.
Right. It took a bit of getting used to, but as the T2000. The Prince Mono, you had to know how to string it, and how to string it to fit your game. I was pretty lucky with that. I experimented and eventually figured it out, but it was a fast racket, a trampoline effect. It had, you know, when it would come off of there, it would fly off of there, and it didn't take, the amount of effort. I think that's why, you know, as I got older, it kind of fit my game, because it didn't take that much effort. Once I got it started, I weighted it and it was kind of like an extension of my arm. And
was it similar to the T2000 a little bit?
Yeah. Only bigger, only a bigger face, bigger head.
So that was like the racket you wish you had in like 1984 or something, when you originally went away from it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, in 86, 87, 88, 89, I mean, you know, I was still playing some good tennis in those days. I was in, you know, the quarters of, in my later years, I was in the quarters and in semis and of Wimbledon in 87, and, you know, and still playing some pretty darn good tennis back in those days. I was spoiled. I started using that T2000 and I thought I would, play forever with that and end my career with that. But, you know, once all that oversized materials came in, you know, made a lot of players, maybe better than they should have been.
Right.
I mean, should I say that? I don't care.
I think people get it though.
Call me out on it. I don't care. but it certainly gave a bigger sweet spot and, you know, allowed, you know, a lot of different shots to happen. And hey, you know, that's progress. You know, I wasn't so much for progress. If I would have, I'd have probably, you know, gotten into it and tried to figure it out a little bit earlier. But yeah, it all works out.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Worked out all right. How about this one? I like this one. Brett, love the podcast you do with your dad. Don't follow. I would like you to ask him if he remembers, of course, Mel Purcell from back in the day. I'm from Kentucky, and Mel is a tennis legend here. Mel told me the story about how your dad hustled him at backhand. Would love to hear the story.
Now, I mean, is that just a bad reputation I've gotten here?
Mel sounds about right.
And still is a buddy. I mean, I think if I haven't seen Mel for a lot of years and since the senior tour days. But I think if I would run into Mel, we'd pick up right where we left off. We were friends, and he played the senior tour with, you know, myself and Borg and Vilas and Clark and Lloyd and Dibbs and, you know, all the guys that played. And he was amazing on the court because, you know, he was a bit younger, but, you know, and still in good shape. But even more so, he was so fun, you know, to go into, you know, the cocktail parties with the sponsors and do the clinics and the pro-ams and with the sponsors and the wives and so forth. And he was an amazing part of the senior tour. I miss him. I mean, we had some fun in the old days playing some matches and the senior tour, but he's always a good guy and, you know, fit in and, you know, was always there to, you know, to do whatever necessary to help make the senior tour successful. And really good guy.
Yeah.
And a friend.
Yeah. If anybody out there is in touch with him, he'd be another guy that'd be great to have on the pod.
He'd have a few stories.
Definitely. Or you're not getting away from that backhand story yet. Let me just talk. I remember Mel from the summers because I would come on tour with you on the senior tour. And then, like, you were a genius putting all these tournaments at, like, really nice golf clubs too. So if you guys weren't playing tennis, you guys were probably on the golf course, and I played a lot of rounds with Mel. And do you remember we had a saying because Mel was playing in front of us in a foursome, and one of us hit up, and, like, you know, he was walking over to the tee on the next hole, and it was right there by the green, and someone pushed it, and I think it was you went, like, you know, like, watch it, Melvin, yelled out, like, watch it, Melvin. And
yeah,
like that goofy, like, saying ended up becoming like, watch it, Melvin, like, for the rest of the summer on the tour.
It became a part of the tour. I think, you know, Vitas would always play with us and Mel. And it was interesting back then, Brad, on the senior tour, because, you know, when we got the sponsors, a lot of the sponsors, the guys wanted to play golf and the ladies wanted to do the clinics and the pro-ams and things. So, you know, we had to kind of split up and say, okay, who wants to learn how to play golf and who wants to stick with the tennis? And, you know, so, you know, Mel could do both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he could play golf and tennis I had to learn to play golf. John Lloyd had to learn to play golf. Vitas had to learn to play golf, you know, so, you know, to keep the sponsors happy. Mel was amazing. If you're listening, whoever sent that in, if you're listening, give Mel our best and tell him to call in and let us know how he's doing. Be good to hear from him.
All right. Now tell me the backhand story.
Well, the backgammon story was in China, was in Canton, China, I was going there and I stopped in Hong Kong on the way and spent the night, and so I said, you know, I don't know much about it. It's my first time there, so I want to go buy a big suitcase and I want to go get some of my own food, then take some of my own food over there. And so I did that, and got a big suitcase, and you know, I filled it full of everything, and so that's what I would play for. You know, the guys would say, "I come in, I'll play you for a spam sandwich,"
or like peanut so, butter.
Yeah, peanut butter. I had peanut butter. I had everything, and you know, you walk in my room, and it was like a deli. You know, but Mel would come in, and we'd play backgammon and hang and kind of chill. And he was always fun. He was a good hang, and he fit into everything, Brad. He could play golf. He could play, you know, he played tennis. He could play backgammon. He could play gin. He could play everything. So he was a real good hang.
Yeah, and I think he was for a while the coach at his alma mater, Murray State, for a while. I think that's right.
Yeah, well, for a long time, because I think his dad was there even right. before him.
Right, that's right.
You know, forever.
Yeah.
So he took over there. So yeah, they got a legacy there in Kentucky.
You brought food to Canton, China. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there was probably some pretty good local food there too, if you wandered out to the restaurants.
I'm not saying there wasn't. I'm just saying just in case.
Right, I know. That's one of the smartest things ever.
I had a very very sensitive digestive system back in those days.
Yeah, the old pack a tin of peanut butter and you know, bread. It will get you a long way when you're traveling, just wherever it is.
Oh yeah. Oh so. Yeah. I think what else you got?
You tell me what else you want to talk about.
Well, we got the Masters and what's going on there. And I'm kind of excited to see how the weather is going to be. You know, if it's going to rain
up.
Or if there's going to be a lot of wind blowing and how that's going to, you know, affect, you know, the outcome in the way a lot of the players, especially those in the lead play, because, you know, when you're trying to catch up, you got to take chances. But right. It's going to be interesting to see how the leaders play if the weather changes. And you know, and also, you know, I want to say it again. It's a tough walk. you know, yep. A lot of elevation changes and, you know, going and I was listening to somebody. I can't remember who it was on the telecast. They said that when he played there, it's the best he's, you know, he ever slept on tour, you know, because of all they had to do to get around the golf course, you know, the elevation change mm-hmm. and the, you know, playing the mental part of it, the physical part of it and everything. So you come home and you're worn out. So getting up and the next day and, you know, getting up and being ready to go and play is going to be interesting to see how a lot of these guys handle it, especially the new guys that are there for the first time or the second time. So going to be a fun, three days. And you know, my TV's on nonstop. I'll be, you know, watching it even at 3 o'clock in the morning, the replay. So
I like it.
Going to be fun to watch.
I like it. It should be fun, to talk about next week. We'll wrap it up. I think we'll stop there. What do you think? I'm going to take Bella. She's sitting here staring at me like she wants to go out, maybe go to the park. She's been a trooper this last week or so with all the work and everything. I've been, she hasn't been going out as much as she's used to. So she's been the MVP for her dad lately.
Well, you still got some daylight down there. Take advantage of it and take her out. You got your girl coming home tomorrow. Melina's coming home. And I know you've had a 3 week break. So, it's either long enough or not long enough,
right?
So either way, but it'll be good. And give her a hug for us when you see her. Take Bella, and you know, you can always follow me, you know, at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, and you at Brett_ on Twitter.
Woo-hoo.
Follow us at Advantage Connors, our podcast, and keep those questions coming. Love hearing, you know, from all those who are a part of what we do and listen to us, and you know, happy to answer anything you got on your mind.
Yep, we love the interaction. Leave us a review or a 5-star review, and we'll check in with you next week, maybe with a special guest.
Peace.
Oh.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.